G'day you mob, Pete here, and this is another episode of Aussie English, the number one place for anyone and everyone wanting to learn Australian English. So today I have a Goss episode for you where I sit down with my old man, my father, Ian Smithson, and we talk about the week's news, whether locally down under here in Australia or non-locally overseas in other parts of the world, okay? And we sometimes also talk about whatever comes to mind, right? If we can think of something interesting to share with you guys related to us or Australia, we also talk about that in the Goss. So these episodes are specifically designed to try and give you content about many different topics where we're obviously speaking in English and there are multiple people having a natural and spontaneous conversation in English. So it is particularly good to improve your listening skills. In order to complement that, though, I really recommend that you join the podcast membership or the academy membership at aussieenglish.com.au, where you will get access to the full transcripts of these episodes, the PDFs, the downloads, and you can also use the online PDF reader to read and listen at the same time. Okay, so if you really, really want to improve your listening skills fast, get the transcript, listen and read at the same time, keep practicing, and that is the quickest way to level up your English. Anyway, I've been rabbiting on a bit. I've been talking a bit. Let's just get into this episode, guys. Smack the bird, and let's get into it. There we go. All right, so you got another story. What do you got? What's on the menu?
Puppies and kittens.
After the sharks.
Yes, I win. This is a puppies and kittens story.
An actual puppies and kittens story.
It's coming into winter in the Northern Hemisphere, obviously.
Yeah, not here.
We're coming into summer. And an animal shelter in Chatham, Kent, which I've been to, which is a county in or municipal
area. Yeah, I assume the county,
in,
not the animal shelter.
No, in Ontario. In Canada, had delivered to them a litter of little kittens that look like, according to the, I haven't read the article and completely to look at the age, but they look from the photographs like they're about 3 or 4 weeks old, and they were clearly dumped on a road, and somebody found them with a stray dog who had curled up around the kittens, keeping them warm.
Pregnant dog?
No.
Female dog? Just a random dog?
Just a random dog.
People are fucked up. It really pisses me off when people do that sort of shit to animals.
If you want to kill them, I don't agree with it. But if you, if you've got no way, you decide, well, hey, my cat's had kittens, then just go and give them to the local shelter or the in Australia the RSPCA or the SPCA or wherever you are, or just kill them if you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
But you just dump them in the snow. It's minus 10 degrees.
And so this dog found them in the snow and just curled up and kept warm.
We assume so, but what they found was the dog curled up on the road, and when the people found the dog, there were these little kittens curled up in, curled up with them.
Dog's probably like, go away!
Yeah.
Get out of here! So, cold enough as it is.
So it's pretty amazing.
Wow, so he ended up saving them.
The dog saved the kittens, because the dogs will, most dogs will survive in, below zero temperature.
Really? They can just heat themselves up, can they?
Well, they just, depending on the species of dog, you wouldn't want to put a chihuahua out there, but the breed of dog.
Quite a bit of surface area to volume ratio.
Exactly. this is a sort of medium to large sized dog, and just there with its little kittens curled up on the side of the road.
There's a random question for you. Do you reckon whales get cold?
They got enough blubber that they don't.
Well, but
a starving whale would.
Yeah. Because do you reckon they get hot?
No.
Yeah.
You can't get hot in cold water. It's impossible.
Yeah. You wonder what it would feel like to be a whale then. If you have all that blubber, you go to somewhere like, Greenland or Antarctica, you're in water that is zero, maybe -1 or 2 because it's salt water. What does it feel like externally to you? Is it pleasurable? Is it just neutral?
I don't know what temperature sensors on, whether whales have temperature sensors in their skin.
Well, and then what happens when you go to tropical
about
waters?
Whale physiology, yeah. Well, it's these whales, if you look at typical whales in Australia, the two most common species that we have, well, three most common species we have is the blue whale, which would be the third most common, I think.
Is it really now? I thought they almost disappeared.
Yeah, well, they did, but it comes up into Victoria, South Australian waters in summer. But
I would love to see
one. We have
two buses, right?
Yeah, and we get them in summer, so they're basically coming up, out of Antarctica. Who knows?
To calve.
They do.
They come up to calve.
Blue whales, I don't think they do. But in our winter period, we have southern right whales and humpback whales. And the southern right whales come up to the south coast of Australia to have their babies, and the humpbacks go up to Queensland. Yeah, they go all the way up the east coast, and similarly up the west coast of Australia,
so they come up
into
and
the
then
subtropics,
yep.
have their babies, and then they go back down to Antarctica. So these are animals that throughout the year will be going from frigid temperatures, from 0 degree or very low digit temperatures, into the high 20s, the mid 20s. So they go potentially going from 0 degrees to 25 degrees.
Well, and that's a substantial difference in terms of
it is,
for us
in terms
at
of
least
physiology.
Yeah, and how it would feel.
And that's why whether that doesn't make any difference to them is would be an interesting one because their body temperature will be way above the 25.
Would buoyancy change?
I don't know.
Or is that more tied to salinity than temperature?
Yeah, it's more salinity, I would think. Yeah. But it's an interesting one. You think more that, this is one we will never know, regardless of what physiology we have understanding of, is that what is their perception of temperature in that water? Do they get up in the tropics and go, whoa?
Well, I wonder, do you wonder if they get to that point where they're like looking at the, what are the cues that are telling them, all right, it's time to go for this year? Is it related to food availability? Is it temperature? Is it weather? Is it climate that's telling them, right, or currents or something in the water that's saying this is time to migrate north thousands of kilometres? And the crazy thing is, I saw a GIF recently that the distance between Melbourne and Darwin is the same distance between Melbourne and the tip of Antarctica. So, it's something like 3,000 kilometres at least as the crow flies. So, it's a long way. And so, these whales are going effectively, assuming they're living around Antarctica on the coastline there.
They're going 4,000 or 5,000 kilometres. They don't get to Darwin, but they go up the east coast too, typically around Fraser Island.
But, I mean, they're not going in a straight line, right? They're going around.
And then up the west coast of Australia, up to sort of Ningaloo Reef and places like that.
But so, you wonder if they are at that point when they realise, it's time to go to the tropics.
You've got to assume that it is seasonal temperature change, which is the clearly the obvious thing that when winter is starting, because they start migrating in about May, and they're migrating up the coast of Australia in sort of June, July, and then they're migrating back down again from sort of August till October.
Yeah.
So you've got to assume that they're starting their migration out of Antarctica in sort of May. And getting back there towards the beginning of summer.
Must be so boring. You wonder what it's like for them coming back from Tasmania to Antarctica with their babies next to them. Do you reckon they just get in there? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Go to McDonald's.
Because it must just be clear water the whole time. Mm. There's no land. There's nothing in between that. Maybe, Macquarie Island or whatever it is.
They won't be sort of island hopping, you wouldn't have thought.
Exactly, but it must be so crazy to imagine being a whale and being in some of the most vicious parts of the ocean where waves are fierce, winds are crazy, there's lightning and all that, and you're just like, well, whatever, I just dive underwater. I just have to come up and get a breath.
Yeah.
It's fine, whatever.
Get a breath every 20 minutes.
Yeah. Also on whales, I wanted to cover this story a few weeks ago, but I forgot to bring it up. There was a mass stranding of pilot whales
there
in Strahan.
Strahan.
Strahan, it's pronounced. It's a weird word.
Strahan.
Strahan. S-T-R-A-H-A-N.
Southwest coast of Tasmania. One of the most beautiful places I have ever been.
Apart from when there are 400 dead whales on the beach. Yeah, I'm dying to go there one day.
It's spectacular.
Macquarie Harbour, I guess to give a bit of background there, is a location where when Australia was colonised, so we colonised Sydney first, and then Van Diemen's Land was the next place, Tasmania. Yes. And Macquarie Harbour, I think, was the first convict jail prison kind of place set up there,
it was
right?
A secondary convict jail.
Yeah.
Hobart and Launceston were the convict settlements. Hobart, in particular,
bring
was the
closer.
First one.
Yeah.
And the
But the real convicts, pieces of shit no, were sent but, to Macquarie Harbour, weren't they?
Those who were the recidivist criminals.
Yeah.
Those who, yeah, they were sent out here and then they started to commit crimes again when they were here. Yes. They got sent to places like Port Arthur later, but Macquarie Harbour was one of the first.
And apparently that's where they were in like horrible conditions.
Yeah, on a tiny little island.
Chopping up trees. Was it Sarah Island?
Sarah Island, yeah.
Chopping trees up.
It's a pretty place now.
Yeah.
It's an interesting place to walk around.
Well, and that's why it would be so interesting.
It's a ruin of a prison.
Well, that's why it would be so interesting to go there. I was reading The Fatal Shore by Robert Hughes.
Yeah,
really good book on convictry in Australia.
Yeah.
But he was mentioning how, this place was hell on earth, effectively.
Well,
and that they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't escape.
The entry to Macquarie Harbour is known as Hell's Gate.
Yeah.
And it's not because of its it's seriously difficult to navigate through. But it was, my understanding is that, and some shipping people would probably deny it, but my understanding is that it was called Hell's Gates because it was the entry to getting to Sarah Island. Sarah, I think they called it at the time. Now we call it Sarah Island.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was hell on earth for these people.
Yeah, and which was the sort of an interesting thing with convictry and some of these places. I think Norfolk Island is the other one, is that when you read this in Robert Hughes' book, Fatal Shore, when they had problem convicts, they had to find a place like an island, somewhere to send them. But then they were stuck between this, we need them to not want to go there. So, it has to be, the conditions have to be such that people would not want to go there.
Yep.
But we also want to be able to rehabilitate them.
Yes.
And so, there's this push and pull. And as you read, some of the people who end up in charge of these locations are the most horrible, nasty pieces of work that the human race has ever spat out.
To be.
Yeah.
It's one of those ironies of, because it's when you're in a very small, as Australia was when it was first settled by Europeans, that when you're in a very small settlement, we're talking about, you know, a few thousand people.
Yeah.
You can't afford to have a significant minority, but a significant number of those people that are completely ostracized from the rest of the community. You move them away by putting them on these little faraway islands and things, but you still have to have them productive, because if you just said, well, 10 or 20% of our population, we're going to stick in prison, they're non-productive. You've got to feed them, you've got to keep them. You might as well just go out and shoot them.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that the rest of the population who are already struggling can afford to keep these people who are, you know,
they're a dead weight.
They're a dead weight. So, you know, places like Norfolk Island is a really interesting place. It was the hell on earth as well.
It's another one, though, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
At least objectively now, but you read about the stories and it was, you know,
but the original reason to send people there was we want to move them away from Sydney, what became Sydney, the original settlement. But we also want them to create farms, and particularly flax, that they could then use. Flax was being used to make linen, mostly to make sails for ships.
Yeah.
And then Norfolk Island pines, the, you know, very tall, straight trees that they were using, well, decided that they thought they could use for masts on ships, but they were crap as
masts
on ships.
They turned out to snap like carrots.
Yeah.
They didn't have really good fiber that they would stay strong and upright. Yeah. But some of those stories were horrifying. Before we get back to the whales of Norfolk Island, I think that the conditions were so bad that because the system was set up that if anyone committed murder, you would have to be sent back to the mainland for trial.
Mm.
The soldiers quite often set up suicide pacts.
Yes.
Where they would draw straws out of 10 people and the guy who got the short straw would be killed by the guy who had the long straw, and it would allow the other 9 to then go to the mainland.
Yes.
8 of whom would be witnesses, and the 9th one gets hanged, but he's like, well, at least I'm not on Norfolk Island.
Exactly.
And the one who dies is like, well, at least I'm not on Norfolk Island.
Yeah.
And so, apparently, that was a frequent thing that occurred because conditions were so horrible. And so, you just can't imagine what these poor men, largely men, were
but at the same
to deal
time,
with day to day.
Norfolk Island was, for a few decades, a functional, productive farm for Sydney.
Yeah.
They were producing quality food and flax for Sydney. So
yeah,
it's a bit bizarre.
But so these whales, pilot whales, I think it was 400 plus, beached themselves, stranded themselves in Macquarie Harbour, which I believe, without having ever been there, is very shallow.
It is.
And so the
and
problem-
it's a very common place for strandings of whales in the sense of, yeah, you don't get them every year, but it would be unusual in a 10-year period that you didn't have some whales stranding in or around Macquarie Harbour.
So, I take it must be really shallow so that it's easy for them to get stuck. It's also hard to navigate out. Mm. So, if the you know, Hell's Gates, the way into the harbour is very narrow, then it's hard to find their way out. But it was really interesting trying to learn about why certain whales strand in those sorts of numbers. And some of the stuff that I had read about was that it tends to be toothed whales that are highly social, right? You don't really hear about blue whales stranding themselves, right? Unless it's sick and it's washed up on shore before it died. It doesn't intentionally strand itself.
Yes, the whales live in large pods.
Yeah, and so we had something like 480 of them. The majority of which died, but 100 or so were saved by humans, you know, who we went down there and put blankets on them, gave them water, and were trying to push them back out to sea. Yeah. But apparently, one of the big reasons that that ends up happening is that from, I can't remember where I read or heard this, the part of their brain that is related to interpersonal relationships and compassion and sociality is much larger than the human brain.
So, they won't leave.
Yeah, and so they refused to leave their partners or their other friends that are in distress. And so, it's almost this heartbreaking thing of where you realize that
it's
potentially-
a suicide pact. I'm sure they don't have a cognitive concept of dying.
Yeah.
But it is that suicide pact of, yeah, my friends and relatives are in trouble, so I'm going to hang around.
Yeah.
And the fact that you hang around means you get stranded at low tide.
Yeah.
And- then even if you get the next big tide that comes in, you're not going to be in a condition that enables you to swim. So,
yeah, but that's why it was just so heartbreaking watching that story, because you hear about how many of them were stuck there, and that you know, it's just not a genocide because it wasn't intentional or anything, but that you just have this mass population die off of all these family members and everything that were living in this pod together.
Yeah.
And you're just like, man, it's horrible. But apparently that's a big reason they just refuse to leave one another and then end up getting stuck. Because they are much more socially bonded. But it blew my mind when I was learning about that to think, you know, maybe we only really get a taste of what that relationship between toothed whales in those sorts of pods is like between mothers and children.
Yeah.
Because Kel, I think, you know, would throw herself in front of a bus without thinking about it. I think I'd do the same, but I would think about it for a split second.
Push her in front of a bus, is that what you're saying? Kel, are you listening?
She won't be listening. She'll be fine. She'll be fine. But you know what I mean? Where there's that, like... The mother-child bond seems to be the... especially mother-daughter bond seems to be the closest human bond that will ever exist. Mm. And you wonder how that compares to whales in this case, especially if objectively we can measure the parts of the brain related to those sorts of relationships, and we find in things like toothed whales that, they've got a much larger region of the brain devoted to this.
It's a sort of social empathy.
Yeah, which is like, holy crap. Okay, it's like they're experiencing love times 10, you know, and we can only hypothesize what that would be like. But
yeah,
it's pretty crazy. Anyway.
It is.
Cool. Finish that one up there then.
We're done. Bye, everyone.
Alrighty, you mob. Thank you so much for listening to or watching this episode of The Goss. If you would like to watch the video, if you're currently listening to it and not watching it, you can do so on the Aussie English TV channel on YouTube. This is different from the main channel. You'll be able to subscribe to that. Just search Aussie English TV on YouTube. And if you're watching this and not listening to it, you can check this episode out also on the Aussie English podcast, which you can find via my free Aussie English podcast application on both Android and iPhone. You can download that for free, or you can find it via any other good podcast app that you've got on your phone, Spotify, podcasts from iTunes, Stitcher, whatever it is. I'm your host, Pete. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you have a ripper of a day, and I will see you next time. Peace!